We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Everyone is talking about magnesium. It's all you hear about. But why? What do we know about magnesium? Well, magnesium is the number one mineral that 75% of Americans are deficient in. If you are a woman over 35, magnesium will help you rediscover balance, energy, and vitality. Magnesium supports more than 300 enzymatic reactions in your body, including those involved in hormonal balance. From functional medicine doctors to mental well-being and female hormone experts, we all know that magnesium is the one mineral to improve all aspects of well-being and health. But which one? Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers. The trusted choice recommended by leading experts with 7 best-absorbed forms of magnesium to ensure your body receives the support it needs for overall well-being. Go to bioptimizers.com/balance today and use code BALANCE10 for 10% off. Support your journey to wellness at bioptimizers.com/balance. Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, your foundation to optimal health and vitality.
IB Nation, welcome back to another edition of the Irish Breakdown Podcast. It is Friday mailbag time, Friday free-for-all mailbag. I'm sorry, everybody. You're stuck with me today. Ryan had a little bit of a family emergency that he has to get taken care of. So if you keep him and his family in your prayers, that would be very much appreciated. But that means it is just us today. And man, you know, I don't mind doing solo shows. I always prefer having a guest with me, but everybody's just kind of got something going on today. But I really wish I had somebody with me today because you guys have some great questions today, and I am looking forward to diving into those. There's going to be some really, really good stuff today. Just a reminder, obviously, for today's show, if you have a question, put MB at the beginning. It would make it a lot easier for us to see the question and know that it's not just part of the normal board conversation, which is always welcome during the show. And that'll make it easier for me to find it, which it can be challenging. Fortunately, you guys have 52 questions already starred for the start of today's show. So I think we're going to have a hard time getting through all those, much less what's coming after that. So, but throw those in there. If you put a super chat in, that goes to the top of the list, obviously. And we certainly appreciate those. So because we have so many questions, we're just going to dive in here real quick. Folks, before we do me that solid of hitting that like button, hitting the subscribe button, hit the notification bell, share this podcast. And if you find a couple minutes here during the show to go on and sign up for the message board and show your support for Irish Breakdown, beyond just the time that we appreciate you spending watching and listening, that would mean a lot to us. And you can find that at boards.irishbreakdown.com. So we're going to dive in here to these questions. And I'm going to go into, there's a recruiting question at the beginning that I'm going to dive into because there was several questions about that I want to get into. And so I want to address some of those here at the beginning, and then we'll get back to the top and try to mix it up a little bit. A couple of y'all had some just ton of questions individually, which we greatly appreciate, but we'll try to mix it up and try to get everybody involved here as much as I can. So we had some questions about 2026 quarterback recruiting, and gee, I wonder why. So we're going to answer some of those, and I'll bring as many of those can up as I can as we dive into this conversation. And the first one is from Adam Dowling. Adam starts things off with a question about 2026 quarterback recruiting.
Football season may be over, but the action on the floor is heating up. Whether it's tournament season or the fight for playoff home court, there's no shortage of high-stakes basketball moments this time of year. Get in on the excitement with Prize Picks, America's number one fantasy sports app, where you can turn your hoops knowledge into some serious cash. Prize Picks is the largest daily fantasy sports platform in North America. We are the easiest and most exciting way to play daily fantasy sports. It's just you against the numbers. Instead of battling thousands of other players, including pros and sharks, you pick more than or less than on 2 to 6 player stat projections and watch the winnings roll in. You can now win up to 100 times your money on Prize Picks with as little as 4 correct picks. You heard it, 4 correct picks. You can turn $10 into $1,000 with NBA, NHL, and college basketball entries today on Prize Picks, America's number one fantasy sports app. It is so easy to use. All you have to do is download the app in the App Store or Google Play Store, sign up, add some funds, and you're in. Then you just find your favorite player and decide more or less on the suggested stat. It really is that easy. The night I joined, I picked Hannah Hidalgo to have more than 14 points, Maddie Westbeld to have less than 10 rebounds, and Marcus Burton to have more than 18 points. And guess what? I hit on all three. Bing, bang, boom, baby. Money in my pocket. It was just that easy. Download the app today and use code IRISH for a first deposit match up to $100. Again, download the app today and use code IRISH for a first deposit match up to $100. Prize Picks. Pick more, pick less. It's that easy.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Adam asks, which 2026 quarterback would Notre Dame rather have, Noah Grubbs or Brady Hart? You know, Adam, this is something that I've put on the message board several times, and this is the honest to goodness truth. Like, this is not spin. This is what has been a consistent message to me from my sources from months looking at the 2026 quarterback class. And that is simply this. We love both of those kids, right? They love Ryder Lyons. Like, those three kids were – I mean, there was the other kid that they liked was the kid out of Tennessee who's a big-time player. Jacob Curtis, they liked him a lot too, but he wasn't very interested in them. That was their group of four. That was their dudes in the 26 class. And as I would try to press people about, you know, who does Notre Dame like more, my sources always came back like, well, you know, this guy does this a little bit better and that guy does that a little bit better, but man, they're all great quarterbacks. And then it came down to, you know, I think Grubbs and Hart sort of were the top two of their list. Combination of they like them the most and they have the most interest, and it just kept coming down to this guy does this better, that guy does this better, but they're both great quarterbacks and we'll take the first one that wants to come. And I'll just tell you this, that that's been a very consistent message, and there's been different times in this process the last couple months where it looked like both of them were on the verge of maybe making a decision, and in both instances Notre Dame was not going to tell either of them no. They genuinely like both players a ton. That is absolutely the truth. Now, when you look at the two players, they also both view them as needle movers. That's the thing, is just keeping that thing rolling to where it's not that, you know, well, CJ and Kenny and Deuce didn't do it for you, but it's about when you can just string that next really big class along that can then be the ringleader for the class. That's why they've been pushing so hard for both of them, because they want to get one of them in the class. And, you know, we'll see which one decides to make a decision first. But this is truly, they wanted both of those kids, not both in the same class, but they would have honestly taken both of those kids. Does that mean every single coach would rank them the same? Probably not, to be completely honest with you. But what I was told is everybody was on board with whichever one of those two wants to come, we'll take, because that's how high they are on both of them. And then the next one is from Bobby S., and I'm going to kind of build on what I was saying to Adam with this next question. There's actually two questions. John Leahy says, update on quarterback recruiting, and do you think a quarterback will make a decision by the end of May or June? I'll just answer that one real quick, John. Yes, I do expect one of them to make a decision before the end of June. Yes, probably sooner rather than later, but we'll see how it plays out. Bobby S. then asked this, and this is where I know some people are, and I'll dive into this a little bit. Bobby says, I was hoping we landed Brady Hart. Explain to me why I shouldn't be disappointed if we do land Noah Grubbs. This is, Bobby, this is not a shot at you at all. I'm just sharing my opinion of this is why I always tell people, stop getting on team this one player, because it's rare that there's just one guy that is, wow, he's the only answer at that position. Love CJ Carr in the 2024 class. Y'all know how high I am on CJ Carr. Does that mean if another quarterback would have wanted to come, I'd have been like, oh, it's disappointing. Now, there was other really good quarterbacks in that class, very high on Kenny Minchie. There were clearly other quarterbacks in that class I'd have been very happy with. Love Deuce Knight. Very happy he's in the class. There were other quarterbacks, George McIntyre, Bryce Underwood, that I'd have looked at and been like, also big home runs in this class. And it's the same thing with these two. You may have a personal preference of who you like between the two. You may say, hey, I like Brady Hart because, you know, he's a better athlete, or I like Brady Hart because I think he has this, or I like Brady Hart because he's teammates with Javon Buggs, and I think landing him might help Notre Dame with Javon Buggs. That may be true. We'll find all that out. But there are other people that are going to say, I like Noah Grubbs more because of insert reason why you like Noah Grubbs more. But the reason that you shouldn't be disappointed is because they're both outstanding top 50 caliber quarterbacks, in my opinion. I don't think there's any doubt that they're both top 50 quarterbacks. Now, they're not both ranked that high, but I don't really care too much about rankings. As you guys all know, I do believe Noah Grubbs is actually higher ranked than Brady Hart on the recruiting services. I'm actually looking that up right now. No, they're about the same. So Brady's five spots below Noah on Rivals. He's 21 spots above Noah on 247, and he's about 14 spots ahead of Noah on On3. So they're about the same. The On3 consensus is Noah's 104 and Brady's 100. So from a recruiting ranking standpoint, they're the same guy. From a talent standpoint, they're similar in a lot of ways. I think Brady's the better athlete. I think Noah's the better, got the more powerful arm. They're both six four plus guys. These are both very good quarterbacks, and the reason you shouldn't be disappointed is because Brady Hart's a very talented quarterback. So is Noah Grubbs. There's no drop off. There might be a personal preference thing. Like, I think Sean Davis and I were talking one time, and I think he said he prefers Ryder Lyons, and his explanation was real simple. I just like guys that are more of dual threat guys. Fair enough. And Ryder Lyons is the best dual threat of the three of them. They're all outstanding quarterbacks, and they're all wins. This isn't like going from, oh, gee, we missed on the five-star, now we got to settle for the guy that's barely top 250. I'm just telling you guys, these are both top 50 caliber players. There's no doubt in my mind. So you shouldn't be disappointed if they don't get Hart and do get Grubbs, because they're both outstanding. And just like the people who would be disappointed in getting Hart because they like Grubbs more, you shouldn't be disappointed. I've said all along, when it looked like they were the leader and we're going to get Brady Hart, I said, great, that's awesome. I love Brady Hart. And he's very talented. Noah Grubbs also is very talented. And the same thing is true now that some are saying that it looks like Noah Grubbs is going to be the guy they're going to get. They're both wins. They're both huge pickups for Notre Dame. And I think it says a lot about whoever makes the decision to come to Notre Dame. I think it says a lot about who they are, because if you're willing to commit to Notre Dame, knowing you've got Kenny Minchie, CJ Carr, and Deuce Knight ahead of you, it tells me you're one serious competitor and you're not going to come in and things aren't working out for you after a semester and bolt, most likely. I mean, anything can happen nowadays, but that's the reality of it, is you're getting that type of player that's going to look at that depth chart and say, all right, cool, I got this. I absolutely love kids like that, because kids like that are have the kind of mindset that they're going to come in and be successful at Notre Dame, because they're not going to shy away from the competition. Ant VR had a little comment. He says, so interesting how hard Notre Dame is pushing for Grubbs. I know his dad, as I used to live in Lake Mary. Work ethic and discipline will not be an issue with this kid. Yeah, I've heard the same thing about him. I don't know Noah or Brady personally. One thing I've heard about both kids is they are grinders. So both kids are going to come in with great attitudes. And like I said, that's something that Notre Dame put a lot of value in with both of those guys, is their attitude and their mindset and just what they believe, the kind of work ethic and talent and character type of player they're going to be adding to the roster with both of them was considered very high. And that's a big reason those two kids became sort of the priority for Notre Dame. So that will kick it off a little bit with some recruiting stuff. So I know that people have sort of a, I'm on team so-and-so and I'm on team such-and-such and all that. But as I said, with the Logan Diggs, Audric Estime thing, and I'll say it with Jeremiah Love and Jadarian Price and CJ Carr versus Kenny Minchie, and it'll eventually be CJ Carr versus Deuce Knight. Guys, they're all excellent. It shouldn't matter who starts. As long as whoever starts or whoever, you know, gets the spot or whoever does this is the person who earned it, then that's how you should feel. And then also to the last point from Bobby S, I would also say another reason you shouldn't be disappointed if it works out that way. And again, let's let these things play out, because there was a time not that long ago it looked like Brady Hart was going to be the guy. Now it's looking like, you know, Noah Grubbs might be the guy. So let's let it play out a little bit. But if it turns out that way, what that means is Noah Grubbs was committed to being a part of what Notre Dame is building more than Brady Hart was. And if Brady Hart makes the decision first, then it means the same thing for him. And you should always want the kid that wants to be here. If it's ever comes down to a battle between two guys, you should always want the guy that wants to be here and wants to compete. And if it's Noah Grubbs, you should be thrilled. If it's Brady Hart, you should be thrilled. They're both really good quarterbacks. Got a super chat from Iden Benami, and we're going to have a lot of questions from my guy Iden today. He says, thanks for the mailbag, B. Appreciate you. And I thank you for the super chat, Iden. I do very much. And it's going to be a fun show today. I think it's going to be a fun show. At least the questions you guys have are good. It's hard to really know if a show is good when it's a solo show, because it's just me. And it's a lot easier to gauge, like when Ryan and I are doing a show, or Vince and I, or Sean and I, and there's like this a really good back and forth, and you feel like you hit a lot of points. It's a little harder to gauge that when it's a solo show. Let's get back up to the top and kick things off with Iris Gordy Knott. It says, what has been the biggest change in the Notre Dame football program since Brian Kelly left? There's a lot of different directions I could go with this. I could talk about alumni relationships, you know, the way that Marcus Freeman is engaged with alums and really reinvigorated the alums, the former players in him and what he's doing. I could talk about, there's a lot more excitement on campus. There's a lot more excitement within the fan base, for the most part, in my opinion. We could talk about, you know, changes in coaching hirings and styles. We could talk about certainly upgrade in recruiting since Brian Kelly left. But I'm going to go with something more big picture than that. The biggest thing that has changed since Marcus Freeman has been hired as the head football coach at Notre Dame is there's no more excuse making. It has been so refreshing sitting here the last 3 years and hearing so little excuse making for why things didn't work out, why they didn't land a certain player, why they didn't win a certain game, why they can't compete for championships, why they can't do this, why they can't do that. It has been so nice hearing the lack of excuses. And even when things didn't go their way, you know, Marcus Freeman could have, when the whole thing happened with Andy Ludwig, and I don't care what Notre Dame says publicly, I know what happened behind the scenes. There was no, Marcus Freeman could have gotten on the phone to all his sources or had his assistants or, you know, had assistant coaches or Chad or friends or whoever, you know, get on the horn and do his dirty work like Brian Kelly used to do and just make excuses for this is why we can't win. This is why it's this. Notre Dame's not serious. He didn't do any of that. He towed the company line and then he went out and made the hire he made. And then realized, hey, the next time this comes about, we're swinging for the fences and we're going to make it happen. We're going to have a better plan. And the way the process went down this year was so much smoother than the way it went down last year. Just he knew who his guy was. It was Mike Denbrock. But if he wasn't going to get Mike Denbrock, he knew exactly who he was going to turn after Mike Denbrock if Mike Denbrock turned him down, which he did at first. And so when you look at it, you're just like, man, this was a perfect example for him to make an excuse. They could have made excuses last year. Well, you know, look, we lost Ohio State, but they got better players than us. It's easier to recruit there. We battled. We kept it close. We should be patted on the back because we were closer in losing to Ohio State than Penn State was, or some other nonsense about that. We never heard that. We never heard excuses about losing to Clemson. We didn't hear excuses about losing to Stanford. When those things happened, Coach Freeman got a little ticked off and made changes. And those are the things when you look at this football team, it's so refreshing to see that. Does that mean that Marcus Freeman's going to win a championship because of that? No. Does that mean Marcus Freeman's going to have Notre Dame, you know, with the most talented roster ever because of that? No. Does that mean he's going to get his way all the time with the administration and different things? No. But what it means is he's going to be, as best to his ability, be a problem solver. Because the minute you start making excuses for why you can't do things, you've surrendered in that battle. You've surrendered. You've said, well, we can't win here, so let's shop down a different aisle. It's so nice not hearing that expression anymore, except when it's done in a mocking manner. Because it's like, hey, look, if we're going to win, we need those type of players. So let's go find those type of players. Some of them might be 5 stars. Some of them might be top 100 guys. Some of them might be 4-star, top 250 guys. Some of them might be listed as 3 stars. But these are the guys that are going to help us go out and compete for a championship. And that's been so refreshing, having a head coach that doesn't just spend all his time making excuses for why things don't work out. It's so refreshing. It really is. And so that doesn't buy him the benefit of the doubt, but it certainly makes him more fun to cover. And it certainly ups the respect level that I have for him compared to what was here before. Riker Ferg with a question. He says, it was blank that B Rabbit, a.k.a. Eminem, opened up the 2024 NFL draft in Detroit. It was typical. I mean, look, that's what they do with this new thing. Now that they go all over, they get the top players from that team. They get celebrities from the area to come in. And, I mean, who's the most well-known celebrity from Detroit in the entertainment industry? As far as I know, it's Eminem. So it would make sense that he did it. So, yeah. And he's done things with ESPN before. And he's done things with the NFL before. So it makes sense. So, yeah, it was assumed. It was smart. I believe. I don't know. I don't know if he's still popular in Detroit. I would assume so. The reception he got was good, so I would assume so. All right, let's go down to Coleman Smith. Coleman with a question. Coleman says, I put this on the board, just want your opinion. Do you think recently outside of Cam Williams and Burgess and St. Louis becoming the new Chicago for Notre Dame? I don't know that it's becoming the new Chicago. I understand the point you're making, but I don't think you can win with just one area. You can't just have one strong area. And here's what I mean by that. I don't mean that you're saying or somebody else is saying that you only recruit Chicago. I know that that's not what you're saying. And I know that you're not saying you need that Chicago so you don't have to recruit nationally. I know that's not what you're saying. We understand there's certain things that are understood that have to be successful in Notre Dame. They have to recruit nationally. What you're saying is that St. Louis is becoming the new sort of home area for Notre Dame relative to Chicago. And I would disagree with that. I think that it's not becoming the new Chicago because I think we're missing a little bit of the success Notre Dame is having in Chicago. You said outside of Cam Williams and Christopher Burgess, I'd push back a little bit on that. Christopher Tarek is from that area. Christopher Tarek's from the same city that Cam Smith is from. They got him. Joseph Reef is from that area. They're getting players from the area. They're not getting as many. They're missing out on some top guys. There's no doubt about that. But they're still getting guys from the area and good players from the area, and they're going to keep battling to try to get more. And Chicago needs to be Notre Dame's Chicago. That's just the reality of it. That's what needs to be their place, and they need to keep recruiting that. Now, what I would say is happening is the staff understands that in order to be successful, it can't just be Chicago. It can't just be, you know, that area. This year's class, though, there's clearly an emphasis being placed on Chicago in this year's class. You talk about Christopher Burgess. Well, I would point out that right now Notre Dame has three kids from the Chicago area in the recruiting class. When you look at Joseph Reef and Dom Hulak to go with Christopher Burgess, they're trying to add some more. There's 26 kids that they're going out and seeing. They need other areas. They have to be able to have success in Fort Wayne, Indiana. They have had some success in Fort Wayne, not much in Indiana. Hopefully that changes soon, and I think that's going to change very soon. But they also need St. Louis. They need St. Louis to be a stronghold for them, but it can't be in spite of Chicago or now that Chicago's lost, right? Like this isn't we're not fighting a war and we've lost our capital city. And so now we got to move somewhere else. No, you fight for your capital city, but you also create a stronghold over here. And that's what Notre Dame needs to do, right? Like they need to battle and battle and battle for their home area, which is Chicago. But they need to create strongholds in Fort Wayne and Indianapolis. They need to create strongholds in St. Louis. They need to create strongholds, you know, in the state of Michigan. They've got to be able to create strongholds in Texas and in the Southeast and parts of California, you know, with private schools and different things. Like they need to be able to have more areas that they can go get top players from. And that's kind of how I look at it. Because I'm looking at this year's class. And then you got three kids from Chicago. Last I checked, you don't have anybody from the state of Missouri in this year's class. You don't, much less St. Louis. So even with that, I still don't think St. Louis is on the same level of Chicago from a volume standpoint. Now, what St. Louis has done very well is give Notre Dame a lot of high-level talent. Does it give the volume of some other regions, but certainly high-level talent. You talk about Kyren Williams. Potentially Gabriel Rubio was good last year when healthy, and hopefully he could be really good for him again this year. Jeremiah Love, Aeneas Williams, Christian Gray. They got Jordan Johnson out of St. Louis as well. Didn't pan out, but it was a big recruiting win. That needs to happen without sacrificing Chicago. So I still don't think St. Louis is still on the same level of Chicago, nor will it ever truly be. Or you really don't want it to be. You need it to be a both and type situation, not an or situation if you're Notre Dame. Coleman, I see your response. You said we're 95% on the same page, 95% of the way. I am just curious, what's the 5% we're not on the same page on? Totally fine. We don't have to agree on that. I'm just curious. What would be a little bit of the disconnect that we have on that last 5%? Just curious, just for discussion's sake. All right, let's go up here, down here. I'm going to try to mix it up. We've got Ball Peen Shalala. So we have a new punter now. Seems the Aussie punter pipeline is getting stronger. how much better than McPherson does Rendell have the potential to be? I honestly have no idea. I have no idea. I've seen him punt one time, and that was in like a drill. I could tell you, well, you know, he's going to be great, and he's got a 5.1 hang time. That's just what I'm told. That's just what somebody wrote in a story. I don't know that that's true or not, and I don't know if that was just that one great punt, and then every other time he's 3.5 seconds. I mean, I remember I was kicking field goals with my wife one time, and it was just because she's used to be a soccer player, and I'm terrible at it. I can't kick field goals to save my life. I can't kick extra points to save my life. It's hilarious, actually. But there's that one time I really got into one and got under it and somehow kicked it really well. Doesn't mean I can then do it every time. It's not repeatable. Are those great hang times repeatable for James Rendell? I don't know. I really don't know. What I'll tell you is this. This didn't come out of nowhere. And I'm not saying this is why Bryce McPherson transferred, because I don't know the answer to that. But I do know that this isn't a kid that Bryce McPherson left and they're like scrambling around and all of a sudden randomly they found some kid in Australia. I'll also tell you this, the staff is extremely high on this kid's potential. What does that mean? I have no idea. I can't say yes because I've never seen the kid punt. And so all I could tell you is just what I'm told. And what I'm told is this kid's got a powerful leg and they're really hoping he can be the guy for him this year. I mean, because they're recruiting him to come in and start. Now he's going to have to win the job, but they're recruiting him to come in and play right away. And we believe he might have as many as 3 years of eligibility left. Certainly two. Let's go back up to hear from Irish Gordian Knott. We'll get another one of his questions. How many more points per game would Notre Dame have had last season if Mike Denbrock was the offensive coordinator? I don't know. I don't know that the points per game would have been all that different, to be completely honest with you. You know, look, there's some games Notre Dame piled up a lot of points late. Maybe in those, like maybe against Pitt, they're up so big at halftime that they pull all their starters and don't score 58 points. And, you know, they had some help with the defense. But, you know, maybe you're in a situation where against, I don't know, Stanford, you put them away so early because they didn't put Stanford away early that you can pull your starters and maybe you don't get to 56. You know, Notre Dame was only beating Pitt 17-0 at halftime. And they came out in the third quarter and had an offensive touchdown, then two defensive touchdowns, or actually it was a defensive touchdown and a special teams touchdown, right? And then you have the offense kind of puts it away and you know, maybe that doesn't happen if Notre Dame's up 31-0 at halftime. They pull their starters and they only win 44-7 or something like that, right? So like it takes the average down. And then against Ohio State, they score more. Against Clemson, they score more. End of the day, it could still be 39.2. Folks, I'm just going to prepare you for the potential that Notre Dame's not going to score as many points this year as they scored last year. That's possible. But that doesn't mean that they're not as good on offense. It's not about how many points you score. It's about your explosiveness. It's about your efficiency. It's about your ability to go out there and play well in the biggest moments. Let's say that Notre Dame doesn't score 40-plus points as many times as they did last year. Because what we said about Notre Dame last year was, man, when they were on, they would bury teams. But there was just so much up and down. They were so different from week to week. I mean, an offense that looked completely inept in 3 weeks in a row against Ohio State, Duke, and Louisville all of a sudden explodes and goes for 48 points in next week. Wasn't all on the offense. You had a defensive touchdown and a special teams touchdown, but the offense did its business. That offense went for 58 against Pittsburgh, or 44 against Pittsburgh if you take away the defensive and special teams touchdowns. It went for 45 against Wake Forest, 56 against Stanford, 40 against Oregon State, but they didn't do anything against Clemson, didn't do anything against Louisville, didn't do anything against Duke, and didn't do anything against Ohio State. So, it's just, there's so many things that we tend to focus on as fans that aren't really the story. You know, what's Emil Wagner's weight? I don't care what his weight is. I care about, can he move people? I care about, can he anchor? I care about, can he do this? Can he do that? Emil Wagner get up to 305 pounds next year, and it doesn't change a bit about his ability to drive people off the ball or anchor. He may not gain but 2 pounds this offseason, but get stronger anchors better. His lower body's a lot more powerful. He can drive people off the line, and he can anchor better on the edge, and he's a great tackle. Sometimes we focus on all the wrong things. Last year, Notre Dame's offense barely was behind Mike Denbrock's 2015 offense for the most for the offense in Notre Dame history with the highest yards per play in the modern era, which goes back to World War II. Was it anywhere close to as good as the 2015 offense? I don't think so. They scored more points than any offense in Notre Dame history, total points and points per game. Not Notre Dame history, since World War I. I think the last offensive score more was something back in like 1913 or something like that, right? Does that mean this is the best offense Notre Dame has ever had since then because they scored the most points? No, it was not even the best offense of the last 5-6 years, in my opinion. So it's not about the points per game. It's going to be about how they play in the biggest moments. And if they score 37.5 points per game next year and they're able to score more against Texas A&M than they did against Ohio State, more against Louisville this year than they did Louisville last year, more against Florida State than they did Clemson last year, I don't care what the points per game average is. I care about the fact that they'd be undefeated at that point in time and play well in big moments. That matters a whole lot more to me. Whole lot more to me. And, you know, that's kind of what I put a lot of stock on. Coleman Smith followed up. He says, I think we've taken some more questionable guys, in my opinion, Reef namely, but I love Hulak. St. Louis has really grown as a city athletically. I'm gonna push back a little bit on that and say this. I think the problem that you have, Coleman, and this is truly with all due respect, is you still look at recruiting as a numbers game from the standpoint of I want X amount of recruits that are ranked at this, and I want this guy that's ranked high, and I want that guy or whatever. And really what it comes down to is you've got to understand how to build it. It's about building a roster to maximize your potential, especially in today's era where kids can just jump in a portal. You need some guys that are project guys. You need some guys that are grinders. You need some guys that are, you know, may not be the guy now, but will be down the road. I personally think Joseph Reef is a much better prospect than Dominic Hulak, personally. And I like Dom Hulak's okay. But my issue, I'm fine taking Dominic Hulak. I'm not fine taking him and then not taking Marco Jones, but if they didn't make that decision, I'd be fine with Dominic Hulak because you need guys like him. Is he the athlete that Nathaniel Owusu-Boateng is, or Madden Fair-Emo or Noah McHale? No, not at all. Is he a tough, hard-nosed, productive football player that brings value to your football team? Absolutely. Same with Joseph Reef. Is Joseph Reef Damian Shanklin? No, he's not. Is he Marco Jones? No, he's not. But he's a kid that has a lot of upside that could potentially be something. And part of this whole thing is you about building a pipeline into a city is you can't only land the top guys from that city. You have to land some of the other guys, the Joseph Reefs and the Dominic Hulaks, to then have greater success down the road landing some of the quote-unquote bigger fish. And so not only is it about building your depth chart the right way, but it's also about understanding that you're laying groundwork in a city before you go out and get the big fish sometimes. And sometimes you're not going to get big fish out of an area, and you're going to have success getting more of the role players, and that's okay too. There's nothing wrong with that, because back when Chicago was really Notre Dame's home front, yes, they produced a lot of stars, but they produced a lot of depth players as well. A lot of guys that whose names you may not know. Luce Umoji would know them. Tim Priester would know them, but like more of casual fans or younger people like myself wouldn't know who those guys are. But they'll tell you, man, that guy was a great teammate. That guy was a great depth player. That guy was a good backup. That guy was a really good special teams player. And your home area has to provide you more of that as well. St. Louis is never going to provide that for Notre Dame, in my opinion. St. Louis is going to be that area, and we've talked about this, that you go to and you get the Jeremiah Loves from, and you get the Christian Grays from, and you get the Gabriel Rubios and the Kyron Williams from. You keep doing that. But Chicago needs to be that place. You're getting 3 to 4 kids out from every year from that area. That's not as realistic in St. Louis, to be honest with you. And so you have to look at them a little bit differently. Every region is going to provide you different things. Like, I don't want to see Notre Dame going down to Florida and Georgia and getting 7 role players. I want you to go down there and get difference makers, the occasional depth guy or role player, but I want you going down there getting depth difference makers. St. Louis is an area that you got to get difference makers, the occasional role player. Chicago is a top to bottom build your roster. Get the studs when you can get the studs, get the role players and get the role players. And that's one of the big differences between the two. And I don't think that St. Louis is ever going to be able to provide that for Notre Dame consistently. Chicago can, in my opinion, as we're seeing in this very class we're talking about. They got a difference maker in Christopher Burgess, and they got two good quality depth players, with one of which I believe has the upside to eventually grow into a multi-year starter. May never, but yeah, we'll kind of see. Riker Ferg asking some strange questions today, but here's another one from Riker. Would you rather have lunch with the Mannings or the Harbaughs? Either. Both. I mean, look, one would be more entertaining because I think it'd be funnier. That's the Mannings. One would be entertaining because it'd be a little strange. That's the Harbaughs. They have very quirky personalities. But here's the thing that we know about both of those families. They are football guys. They are smart. They know the game. They think outside the box. I mean, you're talking about Jim Harbaugh's got a national championship. John Harbaugh's got a Super Bowl win. Their dad was a great coach for a long time. I would learn a lot from both of them. And they'd be very different types of lunches, but they'd be both of them. And here's the thing. We know that Harbaugh would I'm sorry, Antoine, if you're in here, man, I got to do this to you. But we do know that Harbaugh would certainly pick up the tab, especially when we got cheeseburgers. He would certainly pick up the tab. So that's a good thing. But I love talking ball. And those are two families that know football. Absolutely two families that know football, man. Coleman says, hey, it's fair. I do definitely fall into that ranking strat mostly because I'm still learning what to look for in players. And that's part of the fun of this, Coleman. Like, this is not a scolding of you at all. This is a, you know, look, This is what you have to understand about this. This is what you got to look for. And you have to evaluate every commitment in that light, right? You have to evaluate every commitment of saying, you know, hey, what is the purpose of landing this kid? Is this a kid that's coming in to be a difference maker, a game changer? Is this guy coming in to be a really good starter for us? You know, maybe not a star, but a really good football player for a long time. Is this guy that they're bringing in because he's a project? You know, he may not play a lot early, may never pan out, but if he does, he's got a lot of high upside. Or is this guy just being brought in simply to be a great four-year depth player? The reality is Notre Dame is bringing in Jeremiah Love to have a very different role than what they're bringing in Daniel Anderson to have. Both bring value. It's just different. So if you're looking at Daniel Anderson and saying, well, he's not as good as Jeremiah Love. Nobody thinks that he's as good as Jeremiah Love. I hope Daniel does, because I want him to have that confidence, but he's not as good as Jeremiah Love. But you're still recruiting him for a very important purpose, and that's part of roster building. And there may come a day where you're like, man, I did not want that guy in the class, but I'm sure glad that they got him. I'm sure glad that he stuck with it, because now he's bringing a lot of value to your roster. And he plays a very important role on this football team. And that's what recruiting is supposed to be about. And I know we get wrapped up into this, you know, rankings war and this guy's ranked this and this guy's ranked that. But this is, the coaches aren't doing that. They're not playing NCAA 2025 where it's about landing. I mean, y'all remember how it was, right? Coleman, you're a younger guy. I don't know if you've ever played the old NCAA game. But, man, you get these recruiting classes and – you're like all five stars and a couple four stars. You're like, yeah, all right, that's fine. That's fun to do it that way. But in real life, you have to understand, I need to recruit different types of personalities. I need to recruit different types of roles. I need to recruit different types of body types, different type of regional things. There's so many things that go into it that truly define what success is. I mean, you look at the way Clemson recruited. They went out and got some stars. There's no doubt. Deshaun Watson and Trevor Lawrence and T. Higgins was a five-star kid. Justin Ross is a five-star kid. Dexter Lawrence is a five-star kid. A.J. Terrell was a five-star kid. But then they went out and got that three-star kid named Isaiah Simmons that nobody had heard of. They went out in Louisiana and got Travis Etienne, who LSU didn't think enough of to offer. They went out and got other three-star kids that nobody had ever heard of, and they put them all together to build a team. And some guys, their role was to be the star. And some guys, their role was to be a role player, a depth player. But you need all of them to really have a team that can go out there and compete and have the unity that you need as a program, have the depth that you need as a program, have the attitude you need as a program to win. And that's what makes this conversation fun. And so I hope that you didn't take what I said to you as a scolding or oh, you know what you're talking about. It's not that. It's just I've been a coach. I've had to recruit. I understand that it's not just about going out and getting the most talented players. It's about building a team and building a community and understanding that there's value to different types of players. And you go bring those guys in that may not help you win the recruiting rankings war, but they're definitely going to help you win football games. And that's what I'm trying to get across. And I hope that you take it in the spirit that I'm delivering it, because I enjoy having those conversations. Got a super chat from Tyler Evans. Thank you, Tyler. Appreciate that. Give three games that will define this upcoming regular season. No Notre Dame games. That is a very good one. And there's a couple that kind of jump off my mind right away. I'm going to bring up the schedule for this season just to see if there's any more that kind of pop in my head. But the first two that really scream at me are ones early, and that's Georgia versus Clemson in Atlanta. That game, to me, could go a long way towards defining this season in a couple ways. Number one is, I think they're both going to be ranked in the top 15. Georgia will probably be number one. I expect Clemson to be in the top 15, maybe top 10. I would personally have Clemson around the top 10. I really like this Clemson team coming back. They're playing on a neutral field, I say with air quotes, because it's in Atlanta, which is a lot closer to Georgia than it is Clemson, although it's not super far from Clemson. I mean, when I went to Clemson back in 2015, to cover that game, I flew into Atlanta, drove through Athens to get through signs that I didn't go through Athens, but I went and saw signs that, you know, Athens is this way, to drive up to Clemson. And it wasn't that far of a drive, but it's still going to be Georgia territory. But if Georgia goes out there and wins in a close game, it's like, okay, both of these teams are very good. And that's a moral victory for Clemson in the ACC. If Georgia blows them out, that's a big blow for the ACC. And if Clemson upsets Georgia, that's a blow for the SEC and tells everybody that, hey, this team Clemson is back, right? This team Clemson is legit, because there's not a ton of other games on Clemson's schedule that's going to give them a chance to kind of prove that. So I think that's going to be a huge, huge game. And for Clemson, you're in a situation where they can't afford to lose another football game, because of the perception of the ACC, unless they can go out and win the ACC, which is certainly possible, but that's what I'm saying. They can't lose again. They've got Georgia in a neutral field. They got to play at Florida State. They've got to play NC State and Louisville at home. They've got to play Pitt, Virginia Tech on the road. So there's a lot of different battles that they're going to have to fight. But here's the thing. If they beat Florida State, and then Notre Dame beats Florida State, that win doesn't look as good. If they beat Louisville and Notre Dame beats Louisville and they both give it home, then that win's going to not look as good, because those teams will have multiple losses. Like, what's that next big win that allows Clemson to go out there and say, hey, if it's close, you know, bring us in. We should be in the playoff. So they need to at least be competitive in this game, to where if it's a four-quarter game, if they get blown out, that's going to hurt them. If they win that game, then Clemson has a much bigger margin for error, to the point where they don't have to win the ACC to get in the college football playoff. Like, if they go 11-1 or 10-2, don't win the ACC, but beat Georgia in the opener, they're going to have a very good shot at still making the playoff. If they lose and they go 10-2, they better hope they win the ACC championship, because otherwise they're going to have a tougher time getting in because of the perception that people have about the ACC. Here's a couple others. Somebody, John Klimek, my guy, just mentioned LSU-USC. That's a good one, although I have a feeling USC is going to be a lot like 2016 USC, in that I don't expect them to be very good early, but they're going to be much better by October, November, in my opinion. Much better at that point in time. So, you know, I... I don't know that that game is necessarily going to define the season the way that maybe we think. Here's a couple others for me that I think are going to be really big games and could go a long way towards defining the season. And one of them for me is Ohio State, Oregon. I think that is going to be a major, major game. I think when you look at Ohio State and the expectations for them this year, you look at their schedule. Their schedule's not super challenging this year. I mean, they play Akron, Western Michigan, Marshall, at Michigan State, home against Iowa, home against Nebraska, at Penn State. That'll be a big game. Home against Purdue, at Northwestern, home against Indiana, home against Michigan. There's going to be an expectation that they beat Michigan because Michigan lost Jim Harbaugh and lost a bunch of players in the NFL. I mean, Michigan had, 13 players drafted. Ohio State had four. Well, why was that? It's because most of Ohio State's best players came back. That's why Ohio State only had four guys get drafted. So there's going to be an expectation, fair or not, right? I'm not saying that it should be that way. Fair or not, there's going to be an expectation Ohio State should win that game. It's at home. They kind of own Penn State. How much does that game move the needle? The game that's going to really tell us a lot about Ohio State is that Oregon game. And they go out and they play Oregon. But then I would say the same thing is true for Oregon as they're coming into the Big Ten. Like, look, they have a chance right away to establish themselves as, hey, we are a power in the Big Ten right now. And what's the best way to do that? It's to beat the big boys, right? Like, you go into a neighborhood, what's the best way to show that I'm the baddest guy in the block? You know, I just moved in a neighborhood. I'm the baddest guy in this neighborhood. What's what you do? I go find the guy that's considered the baddest guy in the neighborhood, and I kick his butt. I mean, that's now I'm that guy, right? And that's what Oregon has to do. I mean, for their sake, I'm looking at it from both standpoints, because Oregon's got a shot this year to make a big statement. Can we all agree that while Penn State may be the third best team in the Big Ten, the Big Ten for the last decade has pretty much been two teams. It's been Ohio State and Michigan. Wisconsin's had some years. Michigan State had a couple years. Iowa's had some years where they were good in the West. Penn State's had a couple good years. But those are the two big dogs. Well, Oregon's got a shot to play both of them this year. They play at Michigan, and they play at home against Ohio State. If they win both of those games, they step into that conference and me say, okay, we run this thing now. You know what I mean? I'm the captain now, so to speak. If they lose one or both of those games, then it's kind of like, hey, Oregon, welcome to the Big Ten. You're playing big boy football now, right? And so, to me, that's a huge game. Plus, you're talking about one of those two teams, in my opinion. I think those are the two best teams in the Big Ten coming into the season. The winner of that game puts himself in great position to be part of the Big Ten championship game at the end and win that Big Ten championship and then get a bye, because the loser of that game could still get into the Big Ten championship game, maybe even win it, but it's going to be tougher, right? It's going to be tougher to do that. So I think that's a huge game for both teams. It really is. I've thought about some other games. You know, you could talk about looking at the Big Ten versus the SEC. You've got Texas versus Michigan. That's a game that I think you can make a case for, simply because it is going to be a big statement game. It'll be kind of early in the season. You know, it's a chance for Texas to kind of go out there and make a statement. It's a chance for the SEC to make a state, the new look SEC to make a statement against the new look Big Ten. I just don't think Michigan's going to be that good. I really don't. And so I think there's just bigger games afoot, in my opinion. And I think you could look at another big game for me is, I hate to say it, pick Georgia twice, but my other one's going to be a Georgia game. It's going to be Georgia versus Bama on September 28th, same day that Notre Dame plays Louisville. It's one of those things where you look at and say, this is Georgia's chance to kind of show they're the king of the SEC now. Saban's gone. We run this thing. And then it's also a chance for Alabama to say, yeah, I know Saban's gone, but we're still Bama, and we've got a pretty darn good football coach as well. So I think that's going to be a huge, huge game. And again, a lot of these things were about jockeying for positioning in the postseason. Like Archer said that, you know, he thinks the Big Ten title game will be a rematch. It very well could. I'm not going to sit there and say that's nutty, but I think we'll both agree that the loser of that game, and that game is being played in September, right? Or no, it's October. It's October 12th. you and I would both agree, I think, that the losers of that game is in a very precarious situation where they can't afford to lose again if they do want to have that rematch at the end of the year, right? So that makes that a huge game. And there could be the potential that the loser of that game could get knocked out of the playoff. I would say probably not. But, you know, let's say Ohio State goes out this year and goes 11-1 and Oregon goes 11-1. There's a good chance they have a rematch and you know, both of those teams get in. Certainly possible. But there's also that possibility that, you know, Ohio State loses to Oregon and then loses to Penn State and then beats Oregon in a rematch, and then Oregon beats Ohio State and then loses to Michigan and then loses to Ohio State, and then all of a sudden they've got two late losses and they don't get in. Or Ohio State drops a second game and all of a sudden they don't get in. That's possible. I wouldn't bet on it because I think there's going to be a lot of two-loss teams, but it's certainly possible. So especially if you lose twice, because it's like, okay, let's say Oregon wins twice. And it's like, okay, well, Ohio State, you know, you had your chance to show you could be a playoff team and you played a playoff team twice and they beat you both times, once at their place and once in a neutral field. You don't belong in there. Or I think even more so on the flip side, if Ohio State goes on the road and beats Oregon, and then Oregon runs the table the rest of the way, they're 11-1, and then they play Ohio State again on a neutral field and get beat again. If you're the committee, you're like, look, you guys had two cracks at this to beat a playoff caliber team twice. You got them at your place and you played them on a neutral field, and you couldn't beat them both times. Why should we give you another shot at this? And you shouldn't. So I think there's a lot at stake here to where the loser of that game, it could be in a very precarious situation moving forward, for sure. So it's going to be a very interesting situation. And same thing with like the Bama-Georgia game. I mean, think about this. I'm not betting on it. I don't think it's not something that I think is going to happen. But folks, there's a chance that we could be sitting there on September 28th and Georgia has two losses. Think about that. I'm not saying it's going to happen. I'm not betting on it. Because I think Georgia's the preseason number one team, in my opinion. But they got to play Clemson on a neutral field and at Bama. They also have to play, you know, if they're able to win, they also have to play at Texas and at Ole Miss and home against Tennessee and then an SEC title game potentially. Georgia's got a brutal schedule this year, which makes up for how soft their schedule was last year and has been a couple times recently. But their schedule is brutal. So those are going to be the kind of games that, to me, define it. And you could look at it some other ways and say, you know, what if Georgia goes 1-1? They beat Clemson, they lose to Alabama. Well, now Georgia's in a situation where, but they're going to have some tough sledding down the road, because now if they lose at Texas or lose to Florida neutral field or lose at Ole Miss or lose to Tennessee at home, they may be sitting there at 10-2 and sitting at home on SEC title game weekend. And now maybe they're the team that gets left out. So there's a lot of those kind of games this season, which I think is going to make this a very fun and entertaining college football season. I really do. We'll be right back.
The headlines remind us daily, the world is a dangerous place. The elites in charge say everything's fine, stop noticing. But you know better. And your gut knows that time is short to prepare for a world that is four missed meals away from chaos. My Patriot Supply has helped over 3 million families become more self-reliant and is the company Americans trust to prepare. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com and secure their best-selling 3-month emergency food kits. Each contain delicious breakfasts, lunches, and dinners, averaging over 2,000 calories per day. Secure at least one food kit for each family member. For a limited time, save $200, plus get free shipping on all their Ready Hour 3-month emergency food kits. You're not ready if it's not Ready Hour foods. My Patriot Supply also has solar power generators, water filtration units, biomass stoves, heirloom seeds, and critical survival gear. Shop MyPatriotSupply.com today. MyPatriotSupply.com.